Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Now, since we're back on the air in San Diego, why don't we start with a San Diego topic? In fact, I would have started with this no matter where we are or are not, but there was a brawl in baseball yesterday. And yes, you heard me, a brawl. Most of the time when people use the term brawl in baseball, it's in the loosest sense possible. I mean, the truth is, baseball fights really aren't fights. They're just a bunch of guys jawing at each other, taking turns, holding each other back. Nobody really wants to go. And generally, there really isn't a brawl. Nobody wants to go near a brawl. Dudes just get off the bench because they have to. They get off the bench, they go on the field because it's the worst look ever if they don't. And then they mean mug like they want to go when you know they really don't. However, yesterday, the Rockies and the Padres really wanted to go. Now, that was a brawl. That was a legitimate brawl. And like most baseball fights, it didn't actually start the moment that it started, but actually the night before. And actually might even go back further than that, because we're averaging nearly a hit batter per game when these two teams face each other this year. But they both went next level with it yesterday. That was when Rockies reliever Scott Oberg drilled Padres outfielder Manuel Margot in the ribs. Now, that dot job sent Margot to the DL. And then the Padres sent a message to the Rockies. Colorado shortstop Trevor Story was hit in the first inning. The Rockies responded by hitting Hunter Renfroe in the second. You could feel the tension building. You knew this thing was about to come completely off the rails, and there was not a damn thing that the umpires or anybody else could do to prevent it. Then, on the first pitch of the third inning, when Nolan Arenado at the plate, this happened. The pitch goes behind Arenado, and then it's go time. It's drowning pool time.
Nolan Arenado leads off for the Rockies back in the first inning. Rockies at first and second, nobody out, and he struck out. After that, Gonzalez, a fielder's choice. Story got hit by a pitch, and Mike Tauchman struck out. And that pitch behind Arenado, he's going to charge the mound.
Uh-oh!
And the benches have cleared. There is a melee on the infield. Nolan Arenado had a ball go behind him. He threw his helmet down, ran toward the pitcher's mound. Perdomo threw his glove down. Bench is cleared. Here come the bullpens as well. Umpires right in the middle of this, trying to keep peace.
Boy, Nolan Arenado and A.J. Ellis are the two principal combatants in terms of being held back right now after the initial confrontation with Nolan and Perdomo. But you just had that feeling it was going to come down at some point.
Well, yeah, we had that feeling, all right. Rockies radio on that call. I'm not sure drowning pool even does that justice, because that was an all-out bench-clearing, bullpen-emptying, punch-throwing brawl. That was not a bunch of fake tough guys acting a part. Those were guys looking for a piece, a serious piece. Dudes looking to knock suckers the hell out, starting with Arenado. My man was not out there for show. My man was looking to break Luis Perdomo's face after Perdomo threw behind him. And Arenado was not the only guy. Padres catcher A.J. Ellis, 37 years old, a vet of more than 10,000 innings, was out of his crouch like he was shot out of a cannon to chase after Arenado and to protect his pitcher. Padres coach Mark McGwire was right in Arenado's grill, trying to calm him down and maybe remind him how many times the Rocks had already dotted the Padres. And it's a good thing that he did, because Arenado was not playing. This guy was throwing the kind of haymakers that put dudes to sleep if they do land. He was not looking to have a conversation with Perdomo. He was not looking to talk it over. He was looking to tune him up. Nolan Arenado, Silver Slugger, Gold Glover, and from the looks of things, with a little more time in the gym and a little less time in the batting cages, this guy might be a Gold Glover also. Afterwards, he was pretty straight up about what happened.
They thought they had to do something, and I thought I had to do something too, and that's kind of why I went out there.
That makes some sense. That makes some sense. What does not make as much sense is Colorado outfielder Gerardo Parra. Now, I know why he was out there. I just don't know how he was doing what he did once he got out there. This guy stole the show. He comes flying in, seemingly on the back of a teammate, looking to throw. It's an amazing move. Check this out. I've been watching it on a loop all morning long. I think this guy was green screened in there, like he was on some stunt wire that was removed in post-production, because this is an amazing move. You got to check this out. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network with me for the simulcast, you see what I'm talking about. This dude sprints in and gets right in the middle of it. So my man may have been late to the party, but when he got there, he was the party. And then he got ejected. One of five guys ejected. Arenado, Perdomo, Ellis, Marquez, and the Crouching Tiger Hidden Parra. Listen, I want to be very clear about this. Do not get this twisted. Understand where I'm coming from. I am not here to hype brawls. I'm not condoning it. I'm not here to hype it. Somebody could get really hurt badly. Somebody could get their face broken. Somebody could lose an eye. You've got dudes hurling rocks at each other from 60 feet. Then you've got 60 guys on a dead sprint wearing metal spikes, laying the lumber to each other, throwing punches, and having no idea what they're doing or who they're doing it to. And who knows what other heinous activity is going on in that pile. In a brawl like that, it's a small miracle that nobody was badly hurt. I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying what it was. And what that was legit. A legit brawl. So, is it over? Was that it? An eye for an eye. Now they're all square. Doubt that. Not if you listen to Arenado, who when asked that very question said, quote, "I don't have an answer to that one. We'll see." End quote. Translation, get your popcorn ready. Of course, this is not over. It never is. These guys never forget. And in the case of the Rocks and the Padres, they're never going to like each other. You have a couple of class organizations, but class organizations that will go and will protect their own. And they proved it both yesterday. Trust me, that is not the end of that. That was legit, but that is not the end of that. 1-800-636-8686. What a way to return to San Diego. That was a serious brawl. And guys, we're looking to do some serious damage. And lest we forget, Nolan Arenado, that is a bad, bad man. With a bat in his hand, with a glove on his hand, that is a big, strong dude. And he was looking to do some damage. We are joined now by LA Laker, Andre Ingram. Andre, it is so good to have you on the show. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. Thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
Andre, I got to say right off the top, I'll be honest, it's been an amazing NBA season, but I'm not sure there's a better story than yours. Let's go back for just a little bit so people can fully appreciate what you and I are about to talk about. You had a really nice career at American University. You come out, you get selected by the Utah Flash in the Development League draft. What were your first few years like in the D-League?
Yeah, they were. It was exciting, man. It was enjoyable. You know, the D League was kind of a new experience for me. I knew I definitely wanted to play in the D League because my whole dreams had been about the NBA. So, I mean, right after college, there was no overseas thought. It was straight to the D League. And my first few years were great. That Utah team, they were an expansion team that year. It was their first year in the D League. It was my first year in the D League, and I stayed with them throughout that. Their entire existence, which was just a great experience.
Yeah, so it makes sense at that time to do that. But you just wrapped up your 10th season in the G League. The truth is, you have to really love basketball to put in that kind of time for what is now the G League. It's not easy. It's a grind. What kept you going?
You know what? The fact that I felt close, and it's funny to say that, you know, 10 seasons, but, you know, to feel close each and every time, I kind of did. You know, I thought I played well and had stretches and good enough stretches that, you know, something can come of this. And, you know, so that kept me coming back, the genuine feel that, you know, we can do this. And plus being encouraged by others, you know, whether it was, you know, people at home, people I trained with, or even, you know, people in front office or, you know, coaches I ran through throughout my years. And, you know, just people saying, "Hey, man, you look great. You know, just keep going and you know, keep at it." And so I kind of did that. So yeah, it was. I'm glad I did for, you know, these last couple of nights, man. It was all worth it. All worth it.
Andre Ingram joining us. I want to talk to you about those couple nights in a moment, but to give people even more perspective, you're a tutor on the side. What do you tutor? And then how'd you first get started doing that?
So specifically high school mathematics and, you know, preparing high school students for college, you know, so SAT test and ACT test as well. So, yeah, that's my field of tutoring. I got started in it, you know, playing in the D League. You know, you probably need a way to supplement your income throughout the off season and what have you. So Yeah, it was something I enjoyed doing. I mean, I, as much as I love to play and prepare, you know, for basketball, I genuinely have a passion to, you know, like teach math and stuff to kids. And it's nothing like, you know, seeing them get it when they don't understand something. That's how math is. You know, you completely don't understand it, then something clicks for you. So those kind of aha moments I kind of live for on, you know, on the tutoring side of things. So it's just a passion of mine, mathematics is in general.
I love that part of the story. Plus, you majored in physics. Today's episode of the Daily Jungle brought to you by Fan Exchange. Are you looking ahead to the weekend? Are you thinking about buying tickets to your favorite sports, concert, or theater event? Maybe you want to experience a basketball game courtside rather than sitting right there on your couch. Maybe you want to hit an NHL playoff game and bang on the glass instead of your own TV in your own living room. Then head on over to FanExchange.com. The tickets, which are purchased on Fan Exchange, are always guaranteed. You don't have to worry about getting to the gate and being surprised, a bad surprise. You don't have to worry about going there and not getting in. Whether it's NBA, MLB, wrestling, Coachella, a Broadway musical even, Fan Exchange gets you closer to the action. You can find the very best seats at the best prices at fanexchange.com. Use the promo code Rome. Promo code Rome and get 50% off the service fees on your very next purchase. Fan Exchange. We have tickets. L.A. Laker Andre Ingram. So the G League season wraps up and you're called in for your exit meeting, and you've had plenty of those. You know how they go, except this one, they moved up a day earlier. When you first heard that, what did you think?
Yeah, you know what? The moving up a day earlier, didn't think too much of that. And then when our GM told me, well, they have a camera crew following you because they just wanted some things for the website. And, you know, so they'll be doing that with a couple guys. You know, I really thought nothing of that either. You know, it's just, you know, I've been with those guys for so long. We have a type of relationship. I mean, they, you know, tell me anything, and I'm, you know, thinking nothing of it. And, yeah, then to go from all that and then to go to one of the bigger conference rooms, that was different. And, you know, all the guys that were in there for the front office, that was different because it's usually just the head coach and the GM that you'll meet with in their office. So, you know, starting to put two and two together after a while, and then, you know, Rob Pelinka and Magic walk in, and it's over, man. It's just, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Here's the thing. When you get the official word that after all that time, 10 years of grinding, you get the call up, you're going to make your NBA debut on Tuesday night, and I'm watching this video, I'm getting chills. I think everybody who saw it got chills. How were you able to keep it all together in that moment?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I wanted to let loose like my wife and mother did when I called them, you know, in the meeting. I that's what I wanted to do. But I don't know how I kept it together, man. It obviously it was the dream come true. You know, it was, that was it, you know? And so, I don't know, man. I think what happened was, you know, I heard it, but of course something like that, in the amount of time that it, you know, took to get here, it doesn't just sink in automatically. It takes time, but, yeah, man, just overwhelmed. And I think my mind just kind of went to, man, this is great to, okay, man, we got to play. So let's kind of get ready, and you know, the same thing, kind of what Magic said. That's basically what Magic said when he, you know, I'm sure people seen the video now. He's like, all right, now I need, you know, all your shooting percentage. I need that with us now. And I'm like, yeah, you're right, man. That's all there is to it.
Andre, I was going to say, I mean, it's not like they just said, hey, man, you've earned this. What a great story. It's the end of the year. Magic did say to you, hey, listen, you're here for a reason. We want that 48%. We need you. You got to let it fly. So what's it like when Magic and Pelinka and Luke Walton are there and they're saying, hey, we love you. You earned it, but we need it. Let it fly. Do what you do.
Yeah, that part felt the best of the whole thing because, you know, it showed me why they did it. You know, it's excellent to have a story like this to, you know, to grind your way through things and to, you know, finally get an opportunity. That part is great. But, you know, for them to say that, it was like, okay, we did this for basketball reasons as well. Don't forget that. You know, they wanted me to know that, like, you're here because we think you can play basketball. We want you to do what you've done your career for us. So, I mean, that part kind of helped me to, you know, to answer the emotion question. Like, it kind of helped me to say, hey, you know, this is wonderful, everything you dreamed of, but you got to play. Like, that's how you got here. So it kind of shifted me right to like basketball mode. It was excellent to hear that from all of those guys.
Well, Andre Ingram joins me for a few more moments. You know, there should be a movie in this if there's not already. And even the movie, you know, if they have you entering the game, the movie could literally end right there, but it doesn't. I mean, the story in and of itself is amazing, but then you go in and then you get off. You get 19 points, 6 of 8 shooting, 4 of 5 from beyond the arc. You had 3 blocks. You played great defense. And the crowd is getting louder and louder and louder. And even they were chanting MVP, MVP. In your wildest dreams, did you ever imagine it playing out like that?
Yeah, not at all, Joe. I mean, you're right, man. It's like with each step, it got better. You're right. From the check-in, I mean, being checking in the game with Chris Paul and, you know, him speaking with me and, you know, just talking candidly and just thanking me and just telling me how he found my story amazing to him. I mean, that's Chris Paul telling me that, man. Like this, you know, this is a Hall of Fame Chris Paul, a guy I've looked up to, guy I've watched play, guy I've been a fan of, still a fan of. Like, you're right, the movie could have ended right there. And then, you know, for things to, you know, happen on the court the way they did, I mean, that's nothing short of magical, man. It's it was quite the experience from beginning to end of it all. It really was. It just got better with each minute I was out there.
Andre, one thing, I mean, Chris Paul, for him to make a point of coming over and saying, hey, listen, I know your story, congrats and respect, that's one thing. Lots of other guys who play right now were tweeting out to you, but how about Kobe tweeting, love it, in all caps, and Kobe telling USA Today your story, quote, is a gorgeous story, and then Kobe added, quote, dude, the story is ridiculous. Like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? To have the courage and resolve to stick with that dream and now to get your shot and come through in that way, I mean, that's impressive, man. A guy like that, Andre, you know better than anybody, does not throw around that kind of praise. How does it make you feel when you see and hear that from Kobe Bryant?
Yeah, from him especially, man. You know, I've, you know, played with the, you know, LA G League team for a while now. I've got to personally watch Kobe and his practice habits and hear from guys who have played with him when, you know, the Lakers have send downs that come with us to the G League. And, you know, we're all, you know, during those years when I was playing with the Defenders, and or which was the LA G League team when Tom Kobe was here, you know, I mean, during those times when guys would come in, Kobe was all we asked about. How does he practice, man? How does he do it? You know, this and that. And so, like, I mean, that's Kobe, man. Like this is, you know, the guy here. Still is revered here very much so, and by myself personally as well. So, I mean, to hear that from him, you know, my brother had to tell me that, you know, Kobe had tweeted that. I don't have a Twitter. I don't know if you know. I mean, I'm not big social media-wise at all. I don't have anything. My wife and I have a shared Facebook account. So I was hearing all of these things from family and loved ones that, you know, Kobe's tweeting about you, man. These basketball players, all of these guys, the top guys in the league, they are talking about you. I couldn't believe it, Jim. I truly just couldn't believe it that, you know, they found my story to be that inspirational when their careers and their own stories have been that to me. So, remarkable.
I mean, seriously, Andre, the most impressive guys ever to play the game are looking at you and saying, man, you inspire me, you motivate me. It's got to be the most amazing thing, but at the same time, I'm talking to you, and it all seems so natural. I mean, you're also composed about it, and you've got this presence. So let me finally ask you this. What would you say to somebody right now who might be listening, who might be thinking, man, it's just not meant to be? I chased the dream, but I'm going to give up on the fight. I'm going to abandon the fight because it's not meant to be.
Yeah, you know what, the reality is I think we've all hit that point. I think part of the biggest reason that you know, people are inspired by my story and are saying what they're saying, because even the guys, you know, who've made it in the NBA, the Kobe's, the Chris Paul's, like, even for those guys, you may not know it, they may not think it, but they probably hit that point at some point as well. You know, we've all hit a point where it's like, man, it's just not going to happen, man. I've been pushing for it a long time. Maybe it's not 10 years in an NBA, you know, trying to reach that. It's 10 years in something. You've been aiming for something. Someone has for a long time. And, you know, if it's your dream, man, I just feel like you stick it out and you just see what the end is going to be. You know, that's my advice. My story is obviously of endurance. But, you know, it wasn't always pleasant. So for anybody in that part of the struggle, it's not always pleasant. If my story is an inspiration and encouragement to you, God bless you, man, to keep at it. If it's the dream, it's worth keeping at it. And just go see what the end's going to be until you can't go anymore. Who knows how long I would have went, Jim, if it didn't happen, you know, in that exit interview 3 days ago. Who knows how long I would have went. But I would have went to the wheels fell off. So I'm just glad it did happen, man.
Andre Ingram, my man, I could not tell you. I can't say how excited I was to talk to you and then to have a conversation go like that. It lived up to all the hype. It is truly one of the best stories ever. I'm so glad you came on the show to share it with us this morning. Andre, thank you so much. Congrats, and really, really nice to have you on.
Jim, thank you, man. I appreciate all of it, man. Thank you.
Alvin, if you don't mind, can I get a Deca freaking hell yeah, 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 yeah on a yeah, Thursday?
Yeah.
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 Some of you are saying and thinking, damn, Rome, what's up? Have much coffee this morning? How many 5 hours did you slam? Why are you so hyped? The reason I'm so hyped is because of what I just mentioned, that we're still on the air in all these places, but I'm a little more hyped than usual. Yesterday on my Twitter feed, I made the announcement, the jungle returned to where the whole thing got started, San Diego, California. Simply put, Van Smack is back.
Finally!
Van Smack!
Has come back to San Diego!
Sounded just like that. Hey, listen, if you're not in the 619 or the 858 right now, roll with me for 1 second. Because if you know anything about this show, then you know where the show started. And you know how much that San Diego market means to me and this program. So when Intercom announced yesterday that the jungle was coming back to San Diego, after a few weeks of not being on in San Diego, I couldn't have been more hyped. Let me just say what's up and say welcome to 97.3 FM The Fan in San Diego. So glad to be here. And a special shout out to everybody in the parent company and everybody at the radio station that worked so hard to make this thing happen. I could not be more pleased. And clones, I told you I would be back. I knew I'd be back. I didn't know it would happen quite that quickly, so thanks to everybody who made it happen quite that quickly. It feels great. Everybody who went to the mat to make that happen. Good to be back. But as you know, with this, you miss a little, then you miss a lot. And a lot has happened in the last several weeks since I've been away. So, the same way I caught up 750 The Game up in Portland earlier this year, I need to bring 97.3 The Fan up to speed in San Diego. It was only a few weeks, but you missed a lot. So, let me just run this down very, very quickly. Maybe the coolest thing to happen in the last few weeks happened 5 days after the incident in San Diego. A rap song written about me that was made 19 years ago, was finally released and brought to our attention. The artists on this track are Killa the Hun, Straight Jacket, and Casanova. The producer is the late, great Keith Lonaker.
Jim Bone, gonna bring it to your dome like Roy Jones. Bulldog and correspondence with the hotness. Don't even try it, son. I leave them tiresome. The life is one like MJ and Iverson.
Out of the jungle comes a pimp in the box. Putting down smack that'll make you rock. So whether you're rolling in your car, at work, or at home, turn on your dad, who you hear?
Jim Rowe!
Out of the jungle comes a
love that track. Love that track. It's so awesome. I mean, it sounds like it could have dropped today until you listen to all the references. They're all 20 years old. An amazing thing. San Diego, that went down 5 days after the incident went down in San Diego. So, quick shout out to the fellas who made that. And guys, maybe next time, don't wait 19 years to hit me with that kind of gold. Then, about a week later, on the podcast voicemail, some anonymous dude phoned in and dropped this hilarious Offspring parody that we really should be playing more often than we do.
Play it for me, Yumpy.
No, dude. No, dude.
Play it for me, Yumpy.
No, dude. No, dude.
Play it for me, Yumpy.
And I did, no, dude.
And all the girls say I'm pretty fly for a down guy.
Gotta be kidding me. One of the rare times where a parody and a voicemail are actually good and entertaining and make this show better, because that never happens. And, San Diego, if you thought that Rex in the ABQ had changed in the time since you last heard the show, he hasn't. And he proved it once again on March 9th when he made this very unfortunate and unforgettable call.
Speaking of Morton's, I took the old lady there last week for our anniversary. Check came. I said, screw it. It's a big night. Let's get dessert. So I got the molten chocolate lava cake. Had to order a side of insulin with it, though, because I could feel the diabetes setting in. Anyway, on the ride home, something happened. I didn't feel well, and not 10 seconds later, I got the squirts.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very
like
good
I
call.
Said, you miss a little, you miss a lot. Thanks, Rex. Thanks for deadpanning that call about you getting the squirts when you didn't get your insulin because of that chocolate lava cake that you had at Morton's. I can't wait for your next call, Rex. Thanks for making them, and thanks for living in Albuquerque. Miss a little, miss a lot. Rex. Yesterday, also, I made, yesterday, since you weren't here, you missed this, I made my Stone Cold pick, my deadlock NHL Stanley Cup pick. And since you missed it, San Diego, write this down today. You missed it yesterday, write it down right now. Smashville Preds. Now, you know I am never wrong, at least not about the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. Take that to the bank. Some random notes to bring up to get you fully up to date. Dane Cook chunked up and has got a 19-year-old girlfriend. There, I said it. You don't need to say anything about it. Albert Bell chunked up, got drunk at a spring training game, and exposed himself, allegedly. In XR, oh yeah, we still have the fat alarm, which we're not allowed to play, Alvin. Don't go there. An XR4TI staffer, no names mentioned, the pigeon, threw his back out, putting on a golf shoe, and has been going to a chiropractor, and leaves work early on most days now because of that. After his wife said, do not go to the driving range. I want you to stay home. And he went anyway and threw his back out, putting on a shoe. Literally, a 30-year-old pigeon got hurt putting on his shoe. And also, while you were gone, and the rest of us were still here, the world found out that Allen Iverson, in fact, lives in Charlotte.
What brings you to Charlotte?
I live here.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Okay. Man, it's good to see you, AI. What in the world brings you to Charlotte? My house.
I live here.
Welcome back to the jungle, San Diego. They say you don't know what you have until it's gone. But we both knew what we had. Let's be real about that. You knew, and I knew, and here's to not being gone ever again. Here's to 97.3 The Fan. Here's to San Diego, arguably the best freaking town in the world. Joe Hawley is my guest. Joe, it's so good to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. How you doing?
Good, Joe. Great to talk to you. As I mentioned right at the top, Joe, you played 8 years in the NFL, the last three with the Bucks. Earlier this offseason, you announced your retirement. Let me start right there. How long had you been thinking about that, and how did you know it was time?
Man, it was kind of a slow build. I mean, you start playing a lot of football, your body starts breaking down, and the mental stress starts to catch up with you. So the last couple of years, I knew it was coming to an end, and this last year, I actually ended up not starting. I was kind of grooming a guy to change positions, Ali Marpet from right guard to center. So I was actually on the sideline for most of the season, and it was the first time I was on the sideline without that real fire or urge to get out there and play, and I felt really content with it. And at that point, I was like, you know what? I don't really have the fire to play this game anymore. I need to find something else that I do love and I can put my energy towards.
All right, so Joe, what about that? When you start thinking like that and retirement enters your mind, the natural question is, what next? What do I do after football? What kind of thoughts were you then having about life after football?
Yeah, so, I mean, the mindset you kind of have to have to play football is you got to be grinding and working hard, and everybody kind of has this attitude that you need to be getting something accomplished. And so I started stressing out about what I wanted to do. I've always wanted to get into business, maybe start my own business. I've been to the NFL business academies that they put on. And so I've been really prepared for my life after football. And I started getting really stressed out about what I wanted to do next. And there's so many options and so many things that I've done football my whole life. So I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And so I kind of took a step back and looked at my whole life and thought about what an opportunity I have at this point. To do something I've always wanted to do. So I decided to buy a van, rescued a dog from a shelter, and me and her are going to travel the country in this van for a year or two and just see the sights.
Love it. Listen, before you lay that out, and I can't wait to hear about that, there was a time, though, a certain point where you watched a movie on Netflix called Minimalism, a documentary about the important things. So how would you describe that movie, and then what did you think as you were watching it?
Yeah, I mean, that movie's pretty much about this new fad that's going along is minimalism, which is about getting rid of things that don't really add value to your life. And the thing that spoke to me about that is that could be different for everybody. It's not like you need to live with this amount of things, or you can't have this, you need to live with this, or why are you doing that? It's kind of your own journey. And so if it doesn't add value to your life, then you're supposed to get rid of it, because then it's just excess. And so I kind of found that very powerful. And so I decided to kind of give it a try. When I decided to move into this van, I ended up giving all my furniture away to charity, and I reduced my closet by 70%. And basically, if it didn't fit in the van, it didn't stay. And so far, I mean, I'm a week on my road trip, and it literally feels like a weight's been lifted off my shoulders, just getting rid of stuff that doesn't really, I mean, it's crazy how much stuff we accumulate over our lives that we don't really realize is even there, but it definitely takes up space in our soul and our clouds, our surroundings.
Joe Hawley, my guest. Joe, it makes so much sense to me. Like, we had a move recently, and I was going back and forth with my wife, like, throw it away. It's just, it's too much. It's clutter. We don't need it. So I know exactly what you're talking about. But it's one thing for you to watch a documentary like that and think, yeah, man, that makes a lot of sense. But it's another for it to resonate and to make those kind of changes. So, like, where did the idea of buying a van and taking a 48-state trip come from? And what made you want to do that?
I mean, it was kind of a slow build. The idea I had a couple of years ago, I always wanted to see the country. And, you know, not a lot of people know this, but the United States has one of the best national park systems in the world. We have a lot of good public land and a lot of beautiful places to see. And, you know, on social media, you see all these beautiful places, you know, on Instagram and Facebook, of places people have been and magazines. And it's like, I don't want to be looking at these through a screen. I kind of want to go experience them on my own terms and for myself. And so I decided to take this opportunity to go but travel the country and see what this beautiful country has to offer.
Joe Hawley joining us. So, Joe, the van. I mean, you're spending a lot of time in the van. You sold your Mercedes, and now you're in the van. Describe the van. What's it look like on the inside, and how is that ride?
Man, it is a badass vehicle. It's an E350 cargo van that's been converted into a camper by a company called Sportsmobile. The top actually pops up. I don't know if you've ever seen anything like that, but it pops up so I can actually stand up inside of it when it's popped up. It turns into a bed at nighttime, so I can, like, sleep in, like, a little bunk. It's got solar panels on it. It's got a full running sink, a 16-gallon fresh water tank. It's got a mini fridge. I get a trailer in a couple weeks that I'm getting done at a shop that I'm going to have a generator on, propane tank, grill. So it is, it's pretty much self-sustaining. It can go anywhere. It's four-wheel drive, so it handles pretty much anything a Jeep would handle. It's a pretty amazing vehicle.
And listen, when you lay it out like that, I wonder why we don't all do that. But when I mean, it sounds incredible, and I've seen pictures of it. It looks amazing. When you told people around you that you were doing this, what was their reaction? Did anybody think, man, you have completely lost your mind?
I think the biggest reaction is jealousy and envy. I mean, it's crazy that, like, how many people have reached out via social media and DMs and Facebook and emails and just telling me and showing me their stories of how they wish they could do something like this and how much inspiration I'm providing, which is crazy to me. It's blowing my mind, because this is something I've always wanted to do, and I figured, you know, I know a lot of people probably want to do this, so I felt a responsibility to share it with everybody. But the feedback and love and support I've been getting has been incredible, and so I'm just really excited to get this journey started and go see some really cool places.
You know, Joe, we're showing some of the video on our TV simulcast. Something else that's incredible: you not only overhauled your possessions, but you completely changed your physique as well. How much weight have you lost, and how did you go about doing it?
Yeah, so I've lost about 50 pounds since the season. I played last year at 295. I'm weighing around 245, 250 right now. And I just started the keto diet. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Tell me.
It's a high-fat diet, low protein, low carbs. And it doesn't really make sense, but there's a couple books I've read that kind of explain it. I can't really go into detail like right now, but this high-fat diet, and it's when your body changes from burning glucose as fat or as fuel to fat as fuel, and so all this fat's kind of just been falling off me. It's crazy. I almost have a six-pack, which has always been kind of one of my goals. And, you know, eating healthier, that's one thing about football, is trying to keep that weight on. It was just another added stress, and, you know, I had to eat pretty crappy to keep that kind of weight on to play offensive line, and so being able to change that, I just feel so much better already, like stress, my mental clarity, and my weight and on my knees and everything. So it's been a really good change.
Joe Hawley joining us for a few more moments. Listen, if you're going to make a trip like that, you got to have a wingman or a wing person. You've got to have somebody to roll with. And so you went to the Pet Resource Center in Tampa. Initially, you didn't really have a connection with any of the dogs until you met one in particular. Tell me about this dog. Who was it, and what's that dog's story?
Yeah, so I kind of wanted to go get a puppy from, or rescue a puppy from a shelter. And and the puppies go really fast. And so I went to the same shelter 3 days in a row, and every time I got there, it was like 30 minutes away. Every time I got there, the puppies were gone. I looked around a little bit, didn't really find anything I liked. And the third day, I finally was like, you know what, it's not looking good for me to get a puppy, and I just felt like I should walk around. I did a couple play dates with different dogs, and it just didn't really feel right.
Right.
And I saw this one dog that was just shaking in the corner. All these other dogs are up against the fence barking, wanting my attention, and this one was like curled up in the corner, shaking, like super scared. And for some reason, I felt like this dog right here would be so grateful to get out of here and be a lifelong companion. And I just felt this connection, even though that she didn't look at me, she didn't want anything to do with me because she was so scared. But as soon as I got her home, she licked me for like 30 minutes straight, and I could tell she was so grateful. And I got so lucky. I can't believe I found her, because she's already potty trained. She hasn't ripped anything up, and she's the perfect road companion. So it was almost like it was meant to be.
So what kind of a dog is she, and what did you name her?
She is a boxer mix. I'm not sure what she's mixed with. And I named her Freedom. Funny story, I was actually driving home from the Pet Resource Center after I adopted her, and I was FaceTiming with my sister, and I started singing George Michael's Freedom, because I felt, you know, she was now free out of that cage. I was having a new sense of freedom, about to hit the open road. And so I was just excited. And my sister was like, that's a perfect name. You should name the dog Freedom. And it just fit perfectly. And that's how she got her name.
Joe Hawley joining me for a couple more moments. I mean, Joe, you sound amazing. You sound so great. Like, as an NFL player, you know how regimented that life is. So in terms of this trip, I mean, are you really detailed? Or do you kind of roll out every single day and just kind of let the road tell you where you and Freedom should go and what you should do?
Yeah, I mean, I got a rough sketch. These first couple months are kind of nice because I have a lot of weekend trips planned with different buddies and people I've wanted to see. And so I kind of dip my toe in the water, kind of getting it wet a little bit and doing campsites here and there, but staying kind of around places I'm familiar with. And after this couple months, I plan on heading up the East Coast and spending the summer months up in the northern states when it's not too cold, so I can see the cool places up there. But I don't want to plan it out too much. I kind of want to wing it and let the road kind of talk to me, because if I find somewhere I love, I kind of want to just be able to stay there and not have to worry about adding that extra stress element of, I got to get to this place at this time or this place at that time. I kind of just want to go and experience life, kind of just going with the flow.
You know what's great about this? Not only are you doing this, but you're documenting it, and the videos are on YouTube, which are great because they're so honest, especially that first one where you included all of your bad takes in trying to talk to the camera,
man,
and get comfortable.
I did that for like 10 hours.
What was that like?
That was
talk to
crazy.
Me. Right, what was that like?
Yeah, so, I mean, I decided I was going to give this whole vlogging thing and YouTube channel and sharing on social media, which I haven't been good at or big in like my whole career. So I decided, you know, it was my responsibility to kind of share this with people. And so trying it out for the very first time was super hard. And I was filming for like 10 hours. And I finally called my sister and I was like, yo, like, this is terrible. Like, I can't do this. Like, I'm not going to be able to put this out. And then I had this idea. I was like, what if I mashed up how bad it all is and then put it into a video just to show people that, you know, if you do start something new, even though you're not very good at it, you can improve if you work hard at it and put your mind to it and try and learn it. And so I feel like putting that video out was a good idea, because now I feel like I've been improving on my videos as I go with the editing equipment and how to shoot the videos and how to talk to the camera. And that's another good thing about being done with football, is like finding something else to challenge myself and get better at and put my time towards, where it's really kind of fulfilling to see my growth at something else. It's really awesome.
Hey, Joe, that wasn't a good idea. That was not a good idea. That was the best idea. What is the best way for people to follow you and Freedom on your journey?
Okay, I'm on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook at Man Van Dog Blog, and you can follow me on Twitter at jhawley, HAWLEY61.
The Yankees-Red Sox bout did not start with a guy getting hit by a pitch. It started before that. Let's go to the top of the third. Yankees DH, Tyler Austin on first, Tyler Wade at the plate, Alvy.
Tyler Wade, the left-handed hitting second baseman, he bunts it down the third base side successfully. Devers goes to second. They get the front side out there. And Brock Holt, looks like Brock Holt has taken exception to the slide of Austin. And now the benches are going to clear as Austin and Holt got on each other's faces. Now the bullpens are emptying.
Been no pushing or shoving, but Holt normally doesn't react like that unless he felt something was amiss.
Now they've taken Tyler Austin out of there, and all the coaches has pushed him way off to the side. Well, this is Red Sox Yankees after all, rebooted here in 2018.
Oh yeah, he kicked them.
He went in with his left
right
foot.
His left foot hit the right foot or ankle of Holt. Brock was coming off the bag. He did get spiked.
Thanks to Red Sox Radio. Notice there was no drowning pool. No fight, no drowning pool. Red Sox second baseman Brock Holt did not like that slide. He let Austin know about it. Austin did not like being told. And then the bench is emptied. I mean, sort of. If there's no drowning pool, there's no fight. That was more of the classic baseball fight, in quotation marks. You know, somebody believing that there was a code violation, nobody really knowing if there was, and then a bunch of guys standing around bumping their gums. No fight, no drowning pool. Let's move ahead to the seventh. Red Sox reliever Joe Kelly is on the mound. Here's something you should know about Joe Kelly. He enters the game to the remix of that Walmart yodeling kid. Have you seen this kid? Have you heard that? So you know for a fact this guy is the real deal. You roll to the mound to yodeling, you know that that is not a dude that you want to try. You know that. And sure enough, after getting the first out of the inning, Tyler Austin comes to the plate. Tyler Austin, meet Joe Kelly. Joe Kelly, Tyler Austin, let's get it on.
Now here's the 2-1. And it hit him. Austin slammed his bat on the ground, now heads toward the mound, and he's ready to swing. He and Kelly go down on the ground, both benches empty. We have a brawl in Boston, and the brawl is going on. Austin had slid hard into Holt, and so Kelly hit him with a pitch, and Austin charged the mound.
Fight, drowning pool. That was a 97.7 mile per hour heater right to the elbow. Austin was pissed. And I'm not sure what was more impressive, Austin smashing his bat to the ground or Joe Kelly standing on the mound and waving him out saying, come on, waving him out to the bump. I'm going to call it a tie, except that tie was broken by Kelly, who landed a couple of glancing blows on Austin's dome. In the fight, Kelly v. Austin, I'm going to score that round 10-9. In the score of Kelly v. the world, his post-game comment is a 10-8 round. He said, quote, I mean, I was ready to defend myself. If someone comes on my property, in my backyard, I'm going to put up two dogs and get ready to defend myself. End quote. Look, I don't know if that's some sort of metaphor, and he's referring to his fists as his dogs, or if he's saying something about a cookout and maybe offering up a couple of hot dogs because he's neighborly like that, or if that was just a statement of fact. In any case, I'm just not going to go in Joe Kelly's backyard. Because Kelly will go. And it's not like Austin won't go either. He landed a shot on the Red Sox pitching coach. And this was not just a bunch of undercard fighters or clubbers either. CC Sabathia was in the mix, shoving guys to the ground. Aaron Judge had Kelly in a headlock at one point. Giancarlo Stanton was rushing in, which gave Boston's Brock Holt, the guy who had been on the wrong side of Austin's slide, a chance to think better of standing in and trading with those two monsters. He said, quote, yeah, I'm not trying to get involved with any of those guys. I mean, not just those two. They've got a pretty big team over there. End quote. He's right. They do have a pretty big team over there. And that was a pretty decent brawl. A decent brawl. But let's not get it twisted. That was not Pedro v. Zimmer. So don't even try to mention those two names in this context. Nothing will ever top a Hall of Fame pitcher heaving a 72-year-old bench coach to the ground by his head. And as always, to the question of who was in the right and who was in the wrong, the answer to this, unfortunately, is there's a whole lot of gray. Tyler Austin's slide on Holt, I'm not going to say that was dirty, but it wasn't clean. As Holt himself said, it was not intentional, but he, quote, went in hard, a little late, with his spikes up. And that sounds about right. Now, does that justify a near triple-digit heater to the elbow? Probably not. And then there is the other cardinal rule of throwing at a guy. You get one chance. You get one chance. If you blow it, and it sure looked like Kelly was looking for Austin earlier in that at-bat, if you take that one shot and you blow it, you got to keep moving. If you're trying to intentionally hit a guy, you cannot try to intentionally hit a guy twice. That's the code. I didn't write the code, and the only people who understand the code are the guys who play the game at that level. But the code is still a part of baseball, and that's part of the code. Again, I am not in any way condoning violence on the field, although the next person who gets up to leave during a benches clearing brawl will be the first. I'm just saying, Anything that makes these two teams hate each other even more than they already do is absolutely fine by me. I don't want anybody to get their face broken, but anything that keeps the AL East popping from now into October is tremendous. And as I said with the Padres and the Rockies, that fight did not end yesterday. They just went back to their respective corners for a minute break. And they will be standing in the middle of the ring again, trading haymakers before you know it. Two good brawls on the same day, and we're not even into the middle of April yet. Nowhere near the dog days of summer, nowhere near playing for anything that matters yet. And if I told you that I didn't like what I saw yesterday, I would be lying. And I love a dude that comes out and walks out to that. I'd give anything to be able to yodel like that. The only thing better than that kid doing that is a major leaguer walking out to that. I wish I thought of it. Chris Mack is my guest. Chris, it is great to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Jim?
Chris, I'm great. Boy, this is really something, right? I mean, because of the success that you had at Xavier, your name has come up for so many jobs, so many different times. I know for you to leave your alma mater, it had to be something truly special. Let me just jump right into it, Chris. What was it about Louisville that made you feel like this was that kind of an opportunity?
Well, I just think when you think of the history of Louisville and the great teams they've had over the years and, you know, so many incredibly talented players, it was just, for me, a very, very difficult decision to leave Xavier, but at the same time, one that I just had too much excitement for not to pass up. And really glad that I'm a part of the Louisville basketball tradition, and hopefully we can continue it forward.
You know, Chris, it's got that great tradition, but the fact is you are the fourth Louisville coach in the last 48 years, so that tells you an opportunity like that really does not come around very often. But to leaving Xavier, I mean, for you to leave Xavier and Cincinnati, where you and your family foundation had such a great impact, take me through that process. How tough a decision was that?
It's very difficult. You know, the fact that, you know, I wore the uniform at Xavier and I grew up in the city of Cincinnati, you know, it's obviously been home to me for the last 14 years, both as an assistant coach and as a head coach. So, as you mentioned before, you know, Louisville wasn't the first opportunity that came around. So, you know, there were a lot of opportunities I didn't feel, you know, could touch Xavier, and never really felt a need to go anywhere else. But, you know, when Louisville came calling and sat down and I talked to Vince Tyree, the athletic director, over the weekend, that I decided to become the head coach. For me and, you know, where I'm at in my life, this was the final step and really, really a great opportunity to be involved in one of the blue blood programs in all of America. I couldn't pass it up.
Louisville head basketball coach Chris Mack joins us. Louisville, Chris, obviously has been through a tough stretch involving NCAA investigations, sanctions, removal of banners, coach changes. I know if you had reservations about that, you would not have taken that job. But what kind of questions did you ask and what kind of conversations did you have about those matters?
Well, I had a lot of conversation with the athletic director, and, you know, certainly there's a little bit of unknown with all the stuff that's, you know, been happening, not just at Louisville, but all around the country, and, you know, has touched certain programs. But at the end of the day, Jim, the NCAA asked that the school, the university, make an exemplary effort to rid themselves of the problems that were created. And the fact is, Louisville fired their president, their athletic director, their head coach, two assistant coaches. And the player that was in question, Brian Bowen, was removed from campus 3 weeks, you know, after he arrived. So I feel like Louisville had made every intention to do what it needed to do. And so, again, my job isn't to play detective and figure out and tell everybody what happened in the past. I think that's been, you know, well documented and well publicized. I'm really excited about the future of Louisville basketball, and we're going to make this place special again.
We're talking to Chris Mack. And, of course, in the middle of all this, you've got the players and the fans, and they've been on that emotional roller coaster. So how do you go about helping them through that process? What's your approach there?
Well, I think, you know, for me, it starts with getting the former players involved, recognizing the history that's made this place so special, and, you know, putting a great product on the floor as quickly as we can. you know, I have eight scholarship players from last year that really provide me with a great nucleus and great group of core players. And, you know, I think we're going to hit the grad transfer market. And then in 2019 class, look to bring in some special talented players that want to be a part of Louisville basketball. So the quicker we can do things on the floor, I think the quicker the fan base can start to look forward and really get excited about our program.
Chris, and then in terms of the guys you already have, one of the things you've talked about is when you're meeting with your new players, you talk about the fact that they didn't necessarily choose you, you chose them. So how do you go about developing that relationship and building chemistry with guys that you yourself did not recruit?
Sure. I mean, it starts with trust. And I sort of joked with those guys in the very beginning, Jim, that, you know, when you said they sort of didn't choose you, you know, they didn't choose me out of high school. I mean, I recruited them pretty hard. And, you know, each one of them went the south from Cincinnati and went to Louisville. So I had to come follow them. And you know, I think a lot of times when a head coach takes over a program, too much is made about, you know, the old coach's players versus, you know, when that new coach gets his type of player in. And I simply wanted the message to be and the understanding to be that you're my guys now, and I'm gonna fight for you tooth and nail. I'm gonna try to put you in the best position I can to be successful both on and off the floor. And you know, again, trust is built over time, but I told them my excitement level's through the roof to coach them. And I'm going to do the best job I can, you know, from this day forward.
Louisville head coach Chris Mack, my guest. Now, the Big East has been extremely tough over the past few years, and it's not like it's going to get any easier now that you're in the ACC. So how excited are you, and how much are you looking forward to going up against guys like Coach K, Roy Williams, Jim Boeheim, Tony Bennett, Leonard Hamilton, Mike Bray, Buzz Williams, just to name a few?
Sure. I mean, your saw is going to have to be sharp. That's for sure. I look at it more about our players than I do about individual matchups between coaches. I mean, there are so many great coaches around this country and in all different leagues. But, you know, I was fortunate enough to be a part of the ACC, you know, back in 2004. And, you know, when I was an assistant coach at Wake Forest under Skip Prosser. So even though the ACC has certainly added a lot of teams since then, you know, I have a great feel for a majority of the league and have so much respect for the talent level. The tradition, the fan bases, the venues. So it's going to be a challenge, but I think it's one of the many reasons that our players came to Louisville.
Now, Chris, we talked about the players. Obviously, one of your first jobs was to get that staff together, and one of the guys you went to first was Dino Gaudio. He had a nice run in the media after he left coaching. You know how good of a job that is. How were you able to convince him to get back into the coaching grind?
Well, number one, I think he missed it. Number two, I think when you're a head coach, the most important decision you can make, Jim, is to, you know, surround yourself with people that you trust, that you know will do a great job, that both with the players on your current team, future players that you're recruiting, and then the alums and the fan base that you touch every single day. And what better person could you have than a former head coach in the very league that you're in? You know, at one point when I was a player a long time ago, Coach Gaudio was an assistant coach. Of mine, you know, somebody I've looked up to for a long, long time. And I think the expertise that he's going to provide both on the bench and in individual instruction every single day, our players are going to really benefit. And so I'm excited to be reunited with him once again.
Chris, when you're a head coach at Xavier or Louisville, you're a big deal. But at the same time, you're a husband and you're a father to a pair of girls and a son. So when you were at the Final Four and you were getting stopped by fans for autographs, what do your daughters, Lainey and Haley, make of that?
They think it's pretty funny. You know, they don't understand why anybody wants, you know, this bald guy's autograph. But, you know, to them, man, they just see me as dad. And certainly, I get stopped from time to time, and they understand that comes with the territory. But they're going to be the biggest Louisville Cardinal fans, you know, this side of the Mississippi. So they're excited about it. They're just sort of used to it. It comes with the territory.
All right, so there's no way you come on this show and we don't talk about Braden. How much is he looking forward to life at the Yum Center?
You know, Braden, I don't know how much he's looking forward to anything. He wakes up and he starts asking for a donut. You know, we go on there to ice cream, and, you know, he's that three-year-old, Jim, that doesn't want to eat his vegetables before he eats ice cream. And, you know, he's so daggone stubborn and gets his way. And, you know, with our third, you know, we start to let the rules slide a little bit. And his dad's sort of doing his job in Louisville, and mom's sort of, you know, closing up shop here in northern Kentucky, and we're going to, you know, they're going to live here until they're out of school. Braden's getting his way more and more, which could
potentially be a problem here down the road.
Good night now!